The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meets in regular session tomorrow, meeting at the Sheldon Richens building there, starting at 6 o'clock. First up, a discussion and possible recommendation to the Summit County Council regarding amendments to a section of the code dealing with the preservation of historically significant structures. On the phone with me to discuss that, I have planners Ray Milliner, also Tiffany Robinson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
So, Ray, looks like you're returning to look at the rewrite of the code on preserving historically significant structures. So, basically, it doesn't create, a loophole allowing for a much larger development?
Well, I wouldn't call it a loophole. It's more of a ability for a owner of a historic structure to put in adaptive reuse. So if the building is basically outlived its original intended use, it gives the planning commission and the property owner an opportunity to look at a new use that would go into the building and then give the opportunity to use the building for a new use without tearing it down or building something in its place. So it's hopefully it will provide an incentive for preservation.
And now, at the last meeting, planning commissioners wanted to hear from the attorney's office that this is legally defensible. So what does that attorney's report say?
The attorney's office looked at it. They made some tweaks and changes to the document, nothing really substantive. And they were going to take it back, and they said they found that it was defensible. So we're going to take it back, and hopefully we can get an approval.
So any other issues raised by the planning commission?
Any other issues for the historic document?
Yes.
Hopefully not. Hopefully it'll just breeze through and we'll be able to take it on to the council.
All right. And then let's see, a discussion and possible recommendation to the county manager for the final subdivision plat of Canyons Resort Village. Tiffany, this is something that you're handling. Two parcels, both off of West High Mountain Road. One is known as parcel RC-22, a hotel and lodging use. So what are we talking about here in terms of square footage, the height of the building?
So both of these plats are just the actual platting. There's no final site plan associated with it at this point. So it's just really to define the development boundaries and road and utility easements. So for RC-22, which is located directly east of the Vintage on the Strand, that would be allotted 114,000 square feet of hotel lodging with a maximum of 3 to 6 stories for height. So that's an average height when that is to be developed. In the future, that's what would be allowed on there per the Canyon Spa. And then RC-25, which is located directly west of the Vintage on the high side of High Mountain Road, that is allowed 161,000 square feet of multifamily residential with a maximum of 2.5 stories.
Okay. Can you better locate these for us?
The RC-25 plat, it will be on the high side of height. It'll be on the hillside of Vintage on the Strand, just across the road from that. It would be High Mountain Road, where they're currently extending High Mountain Road. So it's on the hillside there. There's the lift. The Sunrise Lift, I believe, runs to the south of that. And then right below Vintage on the Strand, which is RC-22, right next to the Escala and where the next to the current parking area near Sundial, kind of tucked in the middle of those two developments, would be the RC-22 development.
Okay, got it. So tell me, I had thought that Canyons folks needed to, or Park City in this case now, needed to build some affordable housing before they were going to be able to develop any more of their master plan.
Well, actually, that's not necessarily the case. They do have to. There were certain trigger points within the development agreement. At once they reach 25%, not just the master developer, but as the Canyons as a whole, once they reached 25%, that it triggered the planning of the affordable housing, which they are nearing that. Actually, they've already triggered that, and they're going forward with the planning of the affordable housing. It is required to be constructed once the resort reaches 33% of build out. So we're a little ways from that, but that is going to be with, coming developments, that's not going to be far off. So they are going to be reaching that, but it doesn't have to be constructed until they reach 33% of build out.
Okay. Any idea where that's going to go?
I don't have any specifics at this point. It was anticipated at one time to be near the Lower Village area. I'm assuming, I haven't heard that anything has changed at this point, but I don't have any definitive plan in front of me that they have decided for sure that's where it's going, but I'm assuming it'll still be in that Lower Village area near the fire station and the golf course.
Yeah. Any idea how many units need to be built?
There was anticipated originally to be about 262 units, I believe. There has been an updated study. I think we're still close to that. Maybe the numbers are slightly different here and there, and they have talked about incorporating units in other developments. But again, I believe it's very similar to that at this point. Nothing substantially has changed.
All right. Your report noted that these subdivision plats, RC-22 and RC-25, are going up for approval after a stay or moratorium was lifted June 1st. So what was that moratorium for?
Well, so there, you know, obviously some time ago we know that there was some action taken because there were some substantial amenities that were not completed within the Canyon Spa. The county manager, there was a decision, there was actually a seventh addendum to that decision, and part of that was to lift a stay that had been placed but did not allow the master developer to move forward with developing or monetizing any of their parcels until they had substantially completed those obligations. That was decided on June the 1st by current county manager that they would lift that stay, that they could go ahead and move forward with developing or monetizing their parcels.
Okay. And then the joint session with Park City Planning Commission, any idea what the agenda is for this?
You know, I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen the agenda for that. I think that they're just really trying to get the two commissions in a room together discussing, you know, projects moving forward. I don't have the a specific agenda from our community development director at this point, but it's, I think, really just to make sure, you know, we're moving forward on the same page, understanding what's going on within each other's jurisdictions and how they can move forward together.
Okay. Great. Anything else from either of you, Ray, Tiffany?
I think we're good for now.
Okay.
Doing good.
All right.
Great day.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Staff planners Tiffany Robinson and Ray Milliner. It's 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Board of Education meeting tomorrow, starting at 4 o'clock at the school district offices on Kearns Boulevard. On the phone with me, I have Superintendent Amber Conley. Good morning, Amber.
Morning, Leslie.
So let's begin having you respond to the concerns that were expressed at last week's Park City Council meeting that the school district is bullying the community. Basically, if we don't pass the bond, you're going to raise our taxes anyway. That came from resident Bill Humbert.
Right. So, I mean, as we go through the bond, we have lots of different viewpoints that we're dealing with. And as you know, we go back to what we continue saying is that our schools are at capacity. We know we're going to have to build one way or the other with expanding our high school, as well as adding on to our 5-6 school. And the bond does allow for a financing strategy for us to do that. There are other financing strategies, but this is the one that the board really believes in and is committed to.
Well, usually if a bond doesn't pass, the projects don't get built. But in this case, you're telling us that the projects will get built one way or another, and that is why Humbert is saying, you know, that's what a bully would do.
And, you know, he's entitled to his own viewpoint. And as I'm a voice for the board and a bridge between the board, the community, and particularly the staff, they feel firmly that the bond is the best way to finance that.
But again, even if the bond doesn't pass, taxes go up anyway.
There are other strategies to use. I know that you're aware of the capital levy that can be dealt with in a truth and taxation hearing, and that's a normal strategy for other boards to use throughout Utah.
So this seems to be kind of coming really late in the process. I mean, it seems like we should have been talking about this up front. Again, that message being that one way or the other, we're building this, so you can get on with us
and
for the bond.
I would like to clarify that my board certainly isn't. I have to clarify that they are definitely not wanting to be viewed as bullies. They are proponents for our students and for what we need for our students. And right now, we need buildings.
Again, but that's not how it was presented.
And I was as we've been in all the meetings. That is unfortunate that it was viewed that way, because it really was a conversation.
Public hearing is scheduled tomorrow at 6 o'clock to do what exactly? I mean, you've already decided that we're building these buildings one way or the other, and you will raise taxes one way or another. So why do we need a public hearing?
It's required by law. That is, there's several pieces of legal requirements that we have to follow. And we have to have two bond hearings, which we've had posted from the moment that the bond resolution was accepted. And so we have one tomorrow night starting at 6 p.m.
So people show up and say, well, I don't think this is a good idea. And it's like, well, it's happening one way or the other. I mean, is that what you respond?
You know, and I'm going to be really honest with the actual bond hearing is to be able to continue sharing concerns and support. So both support and, you know, concerns that are out in the community. I think that something that's been that we're continuing to work with our messaging out to the community is that while we have the drafts in place, and now the work begins with our design teams. And I know that you know that it's on the agenda for our design teams and our committees for our bond projects to get started in the next couple weeks. And there's some processes to that. We have to have our construction manager ready to go, as well as an architect to help us in the design, because the programming and the design has to be complete in order for us to build, because of the technical drawings that they have to do. But it can, you know, there's still ways of, we're not set exactly where Ecker, where the 5/8 school is going to be. So that's all the work that, as we go through the bond, as we go through the priority list, that we need to hear and continue to hear voices from the community.
So I noticed on the website, and this was last week, it may have changed over the weekend, that there was only a pro-bond statement under your bond heading. What about those who oppose the bond? Don't they get a say?
Right. So thank you for asking. That is a requirement under statute, that certain arguments have to be filed with the county or whoever's running the bond for you. In our case, it is the county. And so for us, one of the requirements that we can do is put a for argument. Anyone could have put an argument against, but it did have to be filed by the dates that are in statute.
Okay. Now, I didn't know about the deadline, so certainly people maybe putting together the anti-bond didn't know about it. I mean, Ember, that's what being transparent is all about, letting people know what deadlines are coming up. Mention it every interview that you're on or that a school board member's on. That never happened once. How come?
And I'm going to be honest, that's why we have our bond council. We hire our own, and they've been part of that. And it's, again, I go back to, this is really common in the state of Utah for our bonds.
To not put up the anti-bond statements?
To be aware of, for all the parties to be aware of what one can and cannot do.
So when was the deadline?
I believe it was September 4th, Leslie.
All right, again, but that was never publicized. How come?
It's part of the county election process.
But isn't it up
and
to...
And I know where you're going is, you know, that was our responsibility. I might have to disagree with you. While we do have a responsibility to follow the law, it certainly isn't our responsibility to make sure that everyone is aware of what one can do and one cannot do. That's not. We're here for our students and to make sure that we're doing what we have to do for our students.
Okay, but you certainly have the opportunity to add that to your website now. Why not? Why not do that? Just to be fair, if nothing else.
Add what to our website?
The anti-bond.
I have not seen one argument against.
Okay. So there's no organized anti-bond group that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. They certainly, I mean, I haven't seen anything as far as, media. I certainly haven't heard it from that or in the paper or been contacted by anyone.
So would you put it up if, in fact, they presented to you, even though it wasn't before the deadline?
Yeah, and I may be really honest. I would have to check with bond counsel because that wouldn't be an issue for me, but I certainly don't want to get crossways in the legal system.
All right. Looks like the school district has hired a communications firm, Strategies 360.
We did. Part of the bond process is to be able to provide communication and factual communication, not promoting either a yes or a no vote. And the communication firm has been hired to do that. One of the requirements that we have to do is a voter information pamphlet, and they will be providing that. And that's something that will be part of the entire packet.
All right. So how much is that costing taxpayers?
Yeah, it's part of the whole overall capital project. And the bid came in a little less than $20,000, and then, but it's I'm going to clarify, but it's on a work. It's basically on a contract, so up to $20,000.
All right. And so, what's the district's message going to be?
The board and the communications firm has been working on that, and it's not final yet. There's a few things that they've been working on, and I know that's going to be discussed at the board meeting tomorrow night with the firm, and it is on the agenda, I believe, looking at the time, around 4:30 p.m. tomorrow evening.
All right, so this is work that is going to be done just before the bond election, and after that the contract is over?
Correct.
All right. Let's see. Also, board scheduled to approve the classified compensation package. How come it took so long with the classified employees?
We were in the final stages right before school ended, and part of the process is for the classified members and the classified employees to vote on it. And unfortunately, with the timing of it, we needed to wait until everyone was then back on contract for the school year in August, and then back and having enough time to vote on that. So that was the delay.
All right. Again, they all get a 31-cent per hour pay raise. It doesn't sound like a lot, but I guess it adds up pretty quickly.
It does, and there were some other things that we put in place specifically with recognizing our employees that have been here and been dedicated to our students for 20-plus years.
Okay. Let's see. How does enrollment look for the year? October 1st is coming up, and that's usually the reporting deadline.
Right. So that is part of my superintendent's report, and it is on my PowerPoint that is posted online. There are some trends that we're seeing. I didn't put out specific numbers just because I really believe the October count is something that we need to follow. We've reached our projections, so all of our projections have been between 90 to 103%, meaning that they're all within what we thought they would be. The trends, of course, is our sixth grade came in high. It's about 103%, so again, at Ecker. But we did anticipate that, and we added three staff members into their schedule this year. I would also say that the kindergarten numbers have come in a little lower than what we anticipated. Jeremy Ranch had a higher class size, but all the rest have come in a little bit lower. And we've been trying to figure out why that is, and there hasn't been a strong argument one way or the other.
Okay. But that bodes well for budgeting?
It does.
All right. Also, there's a task force that includes the school district, Basin Recreation, Summit County, and Park City. The task force to do what exactly?
We have several interlocal agreements with both the city and the county with the use of our fields and our facilities. And as we have looked at our agreements, and as we look at building, there's specific notifications that we have to do to them saying that we're going to be changing that because we're going to be building. And so we've just began to work out some details around that. So, for instance, Treasure Mountain Junior High, we have an arrangement with the city that they get to use 300 hours of Treasure Mountain Junior High's gym. And so with us looking at in the near future, within, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, demolishing Treasure Mountain, then we need to be able to have a plan in place to be able to give something to compensate back, whether it's extra gym time at Park City High School or whatever that looks like. And so the task force is going to be looking at details of that.
Mm-hmm. And also, I know there's an interlocal agreement in terms of the number of fields that the district provides for city use. With new construction, is that going to be reduced?
Right. So not necessarily reduced, but we need to be able to look at that and have a conversation and make sure that things are equitable. There are clauses within the interlocal agreement that talks about whether it's compensated monetarily or in the new build and in a new arrangement. But they are negotiable, and so that's what we're doing. And I would say that throughout the entire process, one thing that's been said both by Tom Fisher, our county manager, and, of course, the county council, Snyderville, Vason, Rena Jordan, and as well as the city council, Anover's been a strong proponent as well as far as saying, you know what? This is we want to cooperate. We want to be able to not just cooperate, but be a good partner, because it's for our community.
All right. Finally, just wanted to ask you. There's a travel request by the band teacher to travel to Hawaii with 80 students to participate in the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor Day. That's quite an honor. But, gosh, who pays for 80 plus people to travel to Hawaii?
That's been Brett Hughes, who, as you know, is our phenomenal Park City High School band teacher. He'll be at the meeting to be able to describe the fundraising that will be part of that.
Has the school district budgeted money for the band team to travel?
Every year we have an allocated amount for national competitions, but this one would definitely be above and beyond what I know that we have allocated, and so that's the conversation and the discussion that the board will have with the high school athletic and activities director, Jamie Sheets, and Brett Hughes, our high school band teacher.
Okay. Amber, anything else you wanted to mention?
The only thing I'd like to throw out there is that we do have homecoming, and as you know, homecoming is exciting and fun for our kids, but just for the community to be aware that to be careful and watch out for our high school students. And the only other thing is that we are having a community showing of Most Likely to Succeed this Thursday evening, and just invite the community out for that.
Okay. Amber, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
It's Park City Superintendent of Schools, Amber Conley. In the studio with me now from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, I have Bob Radke, and then from Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Wendy, you're in to talk a little bit about the Toll Canyon Open House, the Basin. You've been working with Basin Recreation to, what, put together a plan?
A management plan, yeah. Actually, a couple of things to talk about today, but certainly the Toll Canyon Management Plan is one of them. What we are looking at doing at this point.
Yeah, that mic's not working. Thanks.
Okay. So we're having some open houses. We've got a draft up both on the Snyderville Basin Rec District website and on our website, and we're looking for public comment. It details some of the things that we're trying to accomplish in Toll Canyon since the acquisition, which was finalized the end of December 2014, and to really look at what is the appropriate way to put in trails. There's been a lot of comments from the public over time about having a hiking-only trail, and that's something that's kind of an underserved experience, shall we say, and that's something that the Rec District and Utah Open Lands are committed to. So, for example, in the plan, you'll see that the trail along the stream is going to be hiking-only. And then there's a whole area in the plan that's a backcountry area that would not be open to mountain biking. Again, it would be more of a primitive experience. I think one of the things that we are blessed with in this area is that we have a diversity of open spaces and we can provide a diversity of experiences. But we want to have people's comment. We want to know what people think about the plan as it's proposed.
So are we going to have any mountain biking in the area, or is that just going to be hiking and wilderness?
There is a proposed mountain biking connection that would allow people to get from the Mid-Mountain Trail, which of course goes through Utah Open Lands, Baker Griswold piece. It would then connect the current plan would be that it would connect kind of on that west side and then eventually drop down to what is that fire road, and then there'd be another connection to get it up to the Summit Park trails in that particular area. And then depending on what happens down with Discovery through the lawsuit that was filed on that, there is a trailhead that will have to be put in at some point in Discovery, regardless of kind of where they go ahead with their development plans.
All right. So how big is the parcel there?
781 acres.
All right.
Yeah. It's an amazing, and it is critical year-round habitat for moose.
All right. So that's happening September 24th. Where?
So this Thursday, that's the one at the Richens, right?
Yes. At Richens, this Thursday, September 24th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Richens building at Kimball Junction. We're hosting the open house, and we'll have the plan out and want to hear from the public and how they view the plan as it is.
All right.
And then there's another one that's going to happen October 20.
It's October 22nd.
And that one's going to be at the trailside, and then the final plan would, after the public has commented, goes to the Rec District Board for their approval November 18th.
Okay. Is that the final say, or does it have to go to County Council as well?
Just the Rec Board.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up also Thursday, October 1st, you're going to have a Twilight Hike?
Yeah. So we're planning, like last year we did an organized hike into Toll Canyon because access right now is fairly limited and it's hard to get in there. So on October 1st, we're going to meet at Gorgoza, the Tubing Hill in the parking lot there. And we're going to have the Rec District bands and we're going to carpool into Toll Canyon. And we are meeting at 5:30 p.m. And we're going to do a little late day hike.
The
light is so beautiful these days to be out there. So, yep.
Do you need to register or how does that work?
Nope, just show up.
All right. And you're leaving at 5:30, so be there.
Yeah, be there early. And yep.
Yeah, because it's starting to get kind of dark.
Yeah.
How do you access Toll Canyon?
Well, right now it's really limited. That's one of the reasons that we've put together the plan is to look at where the access is. And to a certain extent, the limitations on access are a blessing, but also they're a curse for people who want to try and get in there. So there's very limited access at this time, and that's one of the reasons that we are looking at doing this Twilight Hike so that people get out there and get to experience it. And then there will be the ability with these trails to access it. And then, of course, at some point, there will be a trailhead down in the Discovery area.
All right. And then on Saturday, you're going to have the High Ute Pancake Breakfast and Fall Hike. Again, this is like the one once a year opportunity to get back into the High Ute Ranch.
Right. Yeah, yep. It's October 3rd.
And we're doing, we're calling it our Preservation Pancake Breakfast. It's a celebration. It's free. It coincides with Utah Open Land's 25th anniversary as an organization that's been protecting land up in the Summit County area. As you know, we started right here. And we're excited. We'll be able to look inside the barn, which will be kind of fun. And we do ask that people register. They can go to Utah Open Land's website, or they'll be able to go to the Basin District's website as well to register. That's just so that we know how many people to expect, because when we're flipping flapjacks, we need to have enough for everybody. But it should be really fun, and we're going to acknowledge just very briefly some of the wonderful preservation successes that have occurred in the community and some of the people that have been a part of that for the last 25 years.
Okay. Let's see, Bob, real quick, you've got the Matt Knoop Community Garden planted?
Right, yeah. The new community garden out at Matt Knoop Park, been working all summer to get it kind of up and going, and they did a fall or late summer planting of greens, a variety of greens. It looks like things are growing well, and we're planning a harvest, a community harvest, on October 10th. Didn't get the time on that, but come out and harvest some greens. What's left over is going to go to the Christian Center.
Okay. And then coming up on October 24th, what have you got there? A family fun run or something?
Oh, yes. There's a Celebrate the Spirits. It's a 5K and 1 mile trick-or-treat run at Willow Creek Park, October 25th at 12 p.m.
I think it's the 24th.
Oh, 24th,
yeah? Saturday?
Yes.
Okay. And again, that's happening where?
Willow Creek Park.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
That's it. We hope to see everybody out there on the hikes and the pancake breakfast.
Okay.
And the open house.
Yes.
All right. Wendy and Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, Leadership Class 21's community project is Park City Neighbor Day. In the studio to explain what it is and how it works, I have two members of the class, Mary Beth Maziers and Haley Dynack. Good morning to both of you.
Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, let's see, you came up with the idea as a class. I mean, was it one of, what, a dozen different suggestions?
Yeah, there were a lot of really great ideas, everything from oral health to sustainability to getting people to use alternate forms of transportation. But this one squeaked by as our winner, and Hadley and I have kind of co-chaired the effort to bring it to life, and so we're really thrilled.
It's been a real community effort, though. The entire class has gotten behind it.
Okay, I'm going to have you share that microphone. For some reason, this one keeps shorting out. So I'll probably share this one here.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Get close. And all right, so this is, like I said, like one of several ideas. And how did you guys settle on this one?
What do
you say? Okay, sure. Hi. So the process is we brainstorm a bunch of ideas. The whole class throws out pitches, and then we get little stickers or dots, and we go around and we vote on the ones that we think are the most sustainable, the most interesting, the most relevant to the community.
All right. So Neighborhood Day, it's just one day, or is it going to happen every year, or?
We were recently just granted holiday status by the City Council. So this is going to be an ongoing legacy, we hope. And every fourth Saturday in September will be dedicated to strengthening and celebrating neighbor relationships here in Park City.
All right. How what ideas do you have for people to do that?
Well, we really wanted, rather than putting together another large community event, we wanted to do small local events and encourage neighbors themselves to come up with ideas that were most relevant to them. Right now, we've got between 15 and 20 already identified around the greater Park City and Summit County area. And there are things from riding bikes down the Millennium Trail to ping pong tournaments to
I think the ping pong one had cocktails involved.
Yes, many of them have cocktails involved, but not all.
Yeah, and Hadley brings up a great point. Like, we're as aware as anybody of the event fatigue that can happen. We are so lucky to have so many wonderful things to do in this town, but it can be exhausting. And sometimes the idea of just ambling down to your neighbor's house and having a cup of coffee with some people that you're always racing past on the way to these many events is a welcome thought. And when we rush around with our children, with our dogs, with our families, with our friends, it seems like you just never slow down enough to chit-chat a little bit and just find out what's going on right in the neighborhood. And so these micro events just with the people who literally live right near you is one way to strengthen those relationships, or maybe even introduce yourself if somehow you missed that window. It happens. You meant to bring over some brownies and it just never happens. Now 2 years have gone by and you feel like a nerd. So today's the day. This Saturday, you can wander on over, give them a Neighbor Day bag if you like, or just introduce yourself and say hi.
Yeah. So these neighbor bags are they're a cute little canvas bag. They're available where?
You can get them at the Park City Library on Park Ave. You can get them at the Mark. And I think we'll have them at the Visitor Center as well. And they're only a dollar, which is not our cost. They're nice, sturdy bags. And they're not so big that you have to fill them with a million groceries or something. You can just put a little bag of trail mix and a tomato from the garden and be like, hey.
Oh, how nice. So that's what you're encouraging then. Maybe fill a bag and say hello instead of some kind of organized block party or something, huh?
Yeah. But by all means, if you should want to do an organized block party, go to town. But we just want people to feel that they've got an excuse to make an effort and not feel awkward about it.
Yeah, and other calls to action that we're encouraging people to do are to join Nextdoor, which is a social media site for neighbors. And it's really gaining steam in Park City. I think there are between 3 and 5 communities that are already online. And people share things from, you know, requests for contractors to piano teacher suggestions
lost pets
to more significant things like, you know, maybe there's, a suspicious problem in the neighborhood. So people are talking about that. Or if there's an accident, you know, how to understand what's been going on and how to support the people that have been involved.
All right.
And the sheriff's department and the police department, they're hooked in as well. So they're using it as a communication form for neighborhoods to find out what's going on.
So it's a website then?
Yeah, it's a website and it's very local. So you would register for the neighborhood that you live in. Pine Brook and Jeremy Ranch are the most active right now. But there are a number that are also coming online that we're really excited about.
All right. And it's called what? The website is what?
Nextdoor.com.
Okay.
The other thing is that we're encouraging people to take what we're calling the three neighbor pledge. We know that most neighbors in Park City may recognize each other, but many people don't know each other's names. So the idea is just to kind of pledge that you're either going to meet a new neighbor or get to know a neighbor that you know already, but get to know them better. And the link to that is on our website, which is pcneighborday.org.
Okay.
And one last thing about that. If you happen to get a Neighbor Day bag, inside the bag, there's a tag, and you can just, like, check on a long list of fun things, like, just wanted to get the kids together, noticed your cute dog, wanted to say hi and introduce mine. You know, like, various ways, so you don't have to make it a career out of it. You can just mark what's appropriate for you and extend that.
Yeah. In your press release, you note that there was some research done back in 2010, which I found kind of surprising. We don't really know each other, huh?
Yeah, so I think the research you're referencing is from the Pew Research Center, and they do a lot of studies around the country, and this particular one was a survey of the relationships that people have between the folks that live near them. And I think the data is that 29% of neighbors don't know each other, and 28% of neighbors don't know each other by name. So it's... You know, I think Park City is a little different, and, you know, we're likely ahead of that curve. But I do think, especially with the growth in the area, you know, it's a really great opportunity to understand and raise awareness about the importance of strengthening neighborhood relations.
Okay. So it's Park City Neighborhood Day, and it's happening this Saturday. And boy, the more the merrier, right?
That's right. And actually, it's just Neighbor Day. Rhymes with Labor Day, because it's the opposite of Labor Day. It's Neighbor Day.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just that we feel so thankful to live in a community where neighbors are so wonderful that we actually want to get to know each other. It's more just that we haven't always had the time. It's not that this project is making any kind of remarks on what's there already. We just love each other and want to get to know each other better.
Great. Well, good work. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.